greater trouble. Besides, even if nobody hasn't learned to pick up a game when there is nobody around to tell you.
Yeah.
So my idea is that I would like the game to talk to the child, pick me up.
Instead of the parent.
Yeah, instead of the parent. And this way it does it. When you just half of a sentence, the game is on the floor. And I would like the child then to say to himself, she means I got to pick it up. Now, let me say that it's not guaranteed that he will do, but it's a good beginning. If he doesn't, then I would say to him, it needs to be picked up.
We'll have more from Dr. Hamgunat in just a moment, but we'll start off with the news.
Of about 300 well-hidden and well-dug-in enemy troops near the coastal town of Tijuana.
Holiday season is coming to an end, will be ended shortly, and children are just beginning to face the prospect of going back to school. Just about this time, the post-vacation blues are beginning to set in. And with us this morning, Dr. Chaim Gnat, prominent child psychologist, professor of psychology at New York University, and a frequent and welcome visitor to our program. Dr. Gnat has some timely advice for the parents on a few problems that may arise within these next few days in connection with the kind of letdown in the, after the holiday season. Dr. Gnat, how can parents help children with this post-holiday blues situation?
I think first we should recognize within ourselves that it is the season to be cranky. you just had 10 days of vacation and you have to start going back to work or to school. And just then you wish really there was at least one more day, two more days. Now the child feels the same. So that when he comes over, I would say first of all, three don'ts. One is, do not argue with blues. Don't argue with him about his... meaning what? Do not start like, you just had 10 days of vacation, that's not enough for you. What do you want, a whole year? Something like, I bet if it was up to you, you wouldn't go to school at all. What do you want, to be ignorant? Like your uncle, whatever his name is, and everybody has one in the family. You know what you'll end up if you don't go to school, and so on. Also, I would not start telling him about my own past. Like, when I was your age, if we got one day of vacation, it was marvelous. And even then, we had to work half a day. It doesn't make much sense to the child. So the first thing, I would not argue with blues. The second is that I would not blame the child for blues. I would not attack him for it. I think I would not ask him, what's the matter with you? What can he answer? I think what I would like to do at this time is recognize, just I would say in words, what I know he's experiencing at this moment, like the holidays passed too fast. Before you know it, they were gone. Here, you waited a whole year, and then in one little week, and then I would say, I bet you wish you had another week. And he would say, yeah. And I would say, you would settle for one day. He would say, yeah. And I would say, it just went by too fast. He says, yeah. This prepares him already for the next step, for going to school. And I would say, it's kind of hard to pick yourself up now and going back to school. He says, And I would say, back to the teachers. He says, said, back to the books, back to homework. In other words, the kind of things that I know are unpleasant to him at this time, I mention them with sympathy. And finally, I can say to him, if it's the day that he has to go to school, why don't you take another 3 minutes of sleep? And kind of give him what the French call a lagniappe, you know, something for nothing. And, you know, his answer usually would be, I can't, I'll be late to school. And off he is.
That's interesting.
Really?
Would it be all right to say, now this I don't know, would it be all right to say, along with what you said, after a short time you'll be used to it again and it won't seem so bad? Or is it best to stay off of it?
I myself would not use this, I would not use the kind of cliches. In other words, I would not say to him, well, I would not reason, saying like, well, son, you know, there's a time for everything. You got to take the good and the bad. That's how life is. You know, good things must come to an end. The reason is that they learn it soon enough.
Yeah.
That good things come to an end and there's time for a vacation. And it's better that they say it to you than when you say it to them.
That's very interesting.
When you start like this, they say, well, you can't have a vacation all the time. And I said, but sometimes you wish you could. And they said, yeah, but you, but Mom, you can't, or Dad, you can't. That's how it is. Even you have to go back to work. It's better that he says that to me than when I said that to him.
Really learning something has to come from yourself in a way.
From inside yourself. Yeah. And all the time you are staying the human being, the humane, the understanding. Notice that is not cuddling, because you do not give in and say, well, then why don't you take another day? It's okay, school can wait. You don't say that. Yeah. Mm-hmm. He has to go to school whether he likes it or he doesn't like it. But at least you understand that it's not easy after a vacation to pick yourself up and go to school.
Sure. Doctor, I'm the world's worst when it comes to when I was a kid. I'm always saying that, and I'll admit it. I said, when I was a kid, if we got a day off, we were happy, and my father made me do this, and look at you, you did.
You say this to your kids?
All the time. I'm the world's worst. Why is that wrong?
Joe, it's our generation, because we worked really harder.
You mean
now, Joe, when I was a kid,
oh,
we would have worked harder when we were...
Is it wrong to tell a kid that?
It's in general, it's not wrong and it's not right. What I'm looking is it effective or ineffective? Is it effective?
The way they're looking at me, no.
No. Well, if it's not effective, then you would not do it. You wouldn't drive a car to a place where it says dead end. Would you drive the same car next day? Would you
no.
drive the next day? Would you drive the next day?
No, but I can't understand. I keep saying, you got so much, what are you complaining about? I mean, that's what I'm always
telling. It's a temptation.
And they look at me and say, hey, dummy, you were born 20 years ago. It's your problem. You know, I mean, that's the feeling I get. And
from the way they look at
yeah.
you. So let's change
the
our response, then it'll change their look.
Listen, I'm going to change because you did a great job with my little girl on the flashlight. I got to tell you
about that.
My little girl was afraid of dark, because like a lot of them, Dr. Gannat said, put a flashlight on the top of the dresser, and which I did. I gave her the flashlight, and I said, this is the same one I use when I get up to do the Today Show. You just put it on, throws the light, and when you put it on, I'll get the message. And she's got the light. She knows it's right there and sleeps all the way through.
Of course, it's more than the flashlight. It's the love that you have expressed in understanding your fear, in not blaming her for her fear, and in giving her something to handle it.
I gave her a flashlight and dignity.
That's right.
I'm learning. Listen.
You know, the atmosphere of love comes from more than just the parents. And we have in family situations, people fortunate enough to have them have grandparents, too. And children, there is a tendency for grandparents to spoil the children. In the holiday season, the grandparents may have been with the children. And I want to ask you what happens when you don't mind the grandparents leaving, but the children mind because they've had a good time with them and they love them. So the children start to cry and you're in the middle. Now, what do you do then?
Let me say the first what not to do is do not use logic. I think, in general, you know, cold logic never warms the heart. But you'll get yourself into trouble in using logic, because it will not convince the children, but it'll make grandmother angry and insulted. Like if you say to the child, what do you want, grandmother, to stay here all year?
That's right. That is insulting to the grandmother.
Now, the grandmother will say to herself, and why not? It immediately insults her by implication. Or you would say,
I never thought of it that way.
And then my husband will say, my life is ending, and you tell me like this.
Or that you will say to her, to explain to the child, why grandmother must leave. Like she'll say, well, grandma has her own business, and she must go home. And grandma may just say, well, I would rather stay here a little longer, you know, with you. Also, if you'll explain to the child, now look, you better stop crying. If not, grandmother wouldn't love you. And the little girl may just then and there stand to grandma, grandma, we love me, won't you, grandma? And grandma sure will say, I sure love you. And mother, and she'll say, you see? Which immediately you are caught in the middle.
Separate, yeah.
In general, you know, cynics say about grandmothers that grandmothers and grandchildren really get along so well. There are two things I read. One says, well, the enemy of your enemy is a friend.
Yeah.
Or somebody said also that grandmothers and grandchildren get along so well because they have a common enemy. But these are all, of course, we have to take it with a grain of truth,
with a grain of salt,
because it's not completely true. But there is some kind of fight between generations, and the grandparents do get along better with the grandchildren. So the main thing then is not to use logic in it, and not to try to explain to the child why grandmother must leave. If anything, let grandmother explain it. To us, we can look at the situation and say to the child, I would say in words, what the child says in tears. I would express it in words, what the child says in tears. Now, what do the tears mean? They mean, I wish you stayed here. I wish you didn't leave. I say to the child, I bet you wish grandmother didn't have to leave. I bet you wish grandmother could stay much longer. Now, not only the child likes it, but grandma likes it.
Yeah, that helps. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I would say, I bet you wish that the holiday did not pass so fast.
Sure.
I bet you wish that we had a new holiday so grandma could come again soon. Now, all these words seem to me would be like a balm for... Yeah. Did I pronounce the word right?
Yeah, better than most of it.
A balm in Gilead.
Yeah, right.
A balm to both the grandmother and to the children. And, of course, the child would say to this, yes, you know, when every time you'll say, I bet you wish grandma didn't have to leave, she'll say, yes. Yeah. Possible that grandmother, too, would say, yes. Yeah. And you have communication between the generations.
That's marvelous.
That's cool.
What now, in the case of where the closer bond of the parent and child, and it's necessary for the parent to leave for an emergency situation or for a short, the separation situation, and take a child now around 2-3 years old where the separation is hard, what is the best way to prepare a child for each of those?
Mm-hmm. You know, that is a difficult question, and I've been asked this question before. What do you do when you have to leave a small child for an emergency for a few days or even for more than a week, and there's no way of explaining it in words because they're too little, 2 years old or 2.5 or 3? I would like to leave this thought, that there must be preparation for separation. I know of one sad experience in which a mother of twins had to go to the hospital. And it was a throat operation, so that she knew she couldn't even talk with the children. And you know what she did? She took the shopping bag, went out as though she was going to the supermarket, and didn't return for 2 weeks.
Mm.
The children wilted. They spent most of their time at the window, looking outside, crying, and when the mother came back, they didn't want to talk to her.
Hmm.
Now, I talked to the mother, and she said, well, she thought she would make it easy on the children by disappearing. Of course, there was a father, there was a grandmother around, but she just went out of their lives. Now, I would be very much against this kind of handling. There has to be honest and sincere preparation for separation. We should not disappear from our children that way. Now, how do we prepare for separation with small children? I would like to suggest the following. When a mother has to go, and this is again from an experience of another mother that I'm telling, when she had to go away to the hospital, and she prepared 2 weeks before the operation, she said to her little girl, who was 2.5 years old, Linda, Mommy has to go to the hospital. Let's play Mommy has to go to the hospital. And she had with her, she bought for this special occasion, family dolls, father depicting a father, a mother, a doctor, a nurse, a hospital. And she started with the dolls, speaking for the dolls. Mommy has to go to the hospital. Linda is sad. Linda says, where is Mommy? Where is Mommy? But Mommy has to go to the hospital to get well. Mommy loves Linda. Mommy thinks of Linda. But Linda cries. Linda doesn't know where is Mommy. But Mommy's in the hospital to get well. And Mommy loves Linda. And she was paying attention to it. You know, as though she wasn't talking to her. Because she did not want to face it.
Mm-hmm.
But the mother, every day she's left play again, Mommy goes to the hospital. Finally, the girl caught on and she started supplying answers. For instance, mother said, Mommy is going to the hospital. And Linda would say, to get well.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would say, Linda cries, she doesn't know where Mommy. And Linda would say, oh yes, I know, Mommy's in the hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then she would say, and Linda cries, where is Mommy, where is Mommy? And Linda says, I know, Mommy loves me. She replied to herself this question, where is Mommy? Mommy's in the hospital. They played like this for 2 weeks, and the more they played, the more Linda supplied the lines for it. Then the last day came before she left, and Linda asked to play. She says, let's play once more. Mommy goes to the hospital. So they played, and towards the end, the last line was that she said, Mommy's in the hospital to get well, and Linda said to her, don't worry, Mommy. I'll be here when you come back.
What a switch.
Now, when they left, of course, and Mother did several other things. One is she left a big photo of her and Linda near the bed. Another thing is she left on a tape recorder recorded messages for the little child, like, good morning, Linda. Mommy is in the hospital, but she cannot see you now, but she wants you to know she loves you and she thinks of you. I'll see you soon.
Could the child get through that without any kind of trauma, then, with that kind of preparation?
Well, again, we do not know, but we do the best we can to minimize it. And this would minimize the trauma, I feel.
We run out of time fast at the end of this first hour. And thanks again to Dr. Haim Gannat.
He come back up here and he told me it cost me $350 more. I said, no, it won't, because I don't have it.
He puts down $1,000 worth before we have started piling.
And that's a mess over
and
there.
That's the way they do you, see?
Yeah.
If you don't, you got to stay right with them and keep up with their time. If you don't, well, and when they get half through pushing you, anybody should start them piling, but we thought that they did have sense enough to go ahead and divide up that time, see, but they didn't do it.
He stood around over there and he talked to his brother-in-law and walked from way back over to the pump to get him a drink of water, and that man come up here and told me that, and I told him, I said, yeah, I said, he killed too much time, he had too much company, and he stood around and talked
too
much.
Too close to the highway. That's the main thing, he just close to the highway.
Now, the man you contracted with that?
We had him about an hour.
Was he doing the work?
He had the contractor, an operator.
Had an operator. Mm-hmm. So your operator just gets off and runs.
Well, he turned his time in.
Yeah. Yeah.
He can stand up and talk.
Yeah.
And then when
let me tell you, you got to
I tell you, Mister, this somebody somewhere always ready to put the finger in your eye. Now, Mr. Weaver over yonder, et cetera, he done this for us. When that man tells you that you owe him for an hour's work, you can just bet you'll.
Yes,
that's one of the best.
He's about the honestest.
I wouldn't have any more cleared unless I could get him. No, I wouldn't do it. If he says you owe me $150, I'd just leave it because he's done too much for us.
You couldn't get him?
No, he's tied up with Mr. Shane.
There's too many people after him.
If this rain keeps on, though, he'll be out there.
You can get these fellas nobody else don't want.
I see.
And that cost me $1,350, and but about 6 acres. And half of that was an old field.
Just don't tell me things like that.
That is right. $1,350, and over half of it was an old field. You can go over there and look at it. Go talk to anybody you want to, and they can tell you. And that's in one of the worst messes I've ever seen. I don't know what in the world we're going
to
do with it.
Before I can ever start leveling it, and then I don't know if I'll level it. Stump hole.
Now, I guarantee you, Mr. Weaver, don't leave your place in that seat.
Well, I tell you who recommending this to us more than anybody else. And he's one of them guys that when anything's done for him, it's pretty well done right. And he said that you couldn't beat this man over there. So.
Well, he done some work for this man over there.
Yeah, he done some work for Hogan's over there. Of course, I think Hogan's exaggerated on some work he done. He thinks he got 5-6 acres and I went over there and looked at it, and I believe I could eat all over an acre and a half.
And he said it cost him how much?
$490. Well, it's $700 something. Some piece over that deer. Yeah, so. And then that other was that piece over there where they got watermelon planted now was about $1,400.
That man went over there and looked at that piece of land, and it's mostly all water oak. and some water oak stumps where this dark at Micanopy cut timber. And he says that'll just be a breeze, so he can just go through it. And he did. He went through it. He sure went through me.
I tried to get him. I said, what I'd like for you to do is just to push that stuff up and put it in a windrow at the edge of the field. And forget about it, because it didn't want to take time to burn it. Oh, says, that costs you too much money to push it that far. We can burn it cheaper than that. And he wound up trying to burn it and then push it over.
Ooh, I'm telling you.
Oh, no time.
Yeah.
Mr. Guthrie knows about that. Gee, well, that's just about running me crazy. But he won't never do nothing else for me. And I'm going to take my own good time paying him the rest of what I owe. I don't owe him but about $160. And he's going to need it before he gets it.
Oh, well, he's lost about, around $1,500, $2,000.
Just
on the strength of that. I mean, it's people that was wanting him. It was calling us and coming here to ask us, when will he be through with you? We want to get him when he gets through. And when he got through, they went by and looked at that. And they had already engaged him and called him and told him, no, we don't want you.
They hadn't even talked to us about it. They decided they didn't want
him. Yeah, We didn't know that they didn't want him, see, till they decided that if they're going to do that kind of work, they didn't need him. Well, you can't blame them.
Oh.
My brother-in-law was wanting some work done, and Morgan Sykes in Island Grove, he come here, and wanting to know where he lived, and Miss Guthrie carried him in there and called the man. He talked to him and engaged him, I think, and everything. When he started to move, he went over there and looked at the ground and decided he didn't need him.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, and he had to drive slap back to whereabouts, was it?
Johnson, up there
somewhere. Somewhere to get a little old piece of cable. But I told a man about that.
Anyway, his boss man said the contractor said he's working by the old time, starting knocking off by it. Well, he might have thought he was.
He worked by the new time.
He was starting by the old time and knocking off by the new time. What are you doing?
Yeah.
Oh, heck, he's leaving there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah. That's the miles you got back then?
Mr. Dodd's got one over yonder that we can use, but you know, I just hate to
borrow people's stuff all the time.
I borrowed it here a while back, but I hate to. And another thing we need is a hay rake.
Mm-hmm. Well,
we've been using his every year, but I feel like that I ought to get
one,
let him use it.
He just about hadn't got one. Also, him one's going to have to get one this hay season, mm-hmm, if he stays in the hay business. If he keeps working out at the university, I don't reckon I don't know where he's going to be in the business or not.
He's a watermelon man now, isn't he?
Well, I think he got rich on that and still working at the university.
Yeah.
Miss Dodd tickled a fire out of me the other day. Didn't say nothing. She said, you know, Dick Wilkerson is the crookedest man I ever seen in my life. I said, he is.
He can't hook you one way, he'll pick up something else.
She said, that's the crookedest man I ever seen in my life. Well, I could have told her that.
Well, I understand that you did.
No, I told her about the man that built her house.
Yeah.
And I did tell him to watch him. She said that was the crookedest man she ever seen in her life. But they went to his house. He had a brand new Buick. And they went to his house. And they looked for trucks. Well, to see if his Buick had been out. Well, heck, if I wanted to drive my car out of the shed, I could take my water hose. And
well,
I could.
His car hadn't
but
been
you
out
know
from
one
the
thing?
Rain.
You know that there was some talk of it that him and his brothers was the one on that.
Well, his brother. And the Buick, it was owned at the discretion.
says, and you know Sykes is a crook, too. I said, he is? Yeah. She said that, you know what he done? I said, well, I wouldn't know. I said, you can't put your finger on anybody these days. Huh? Said, him and old Dick Wilkerson went down the road, John, and killed a doe deer. Split him right down the center and divided him. I said, oh, they did. Said, yes, said Dick come up here and told me. I said, Miss Sykes, Dot, he just lied to you. I said, Dick just lied. If it had been so, he wouldn't have told you that. She said, yes, he said it was, and said for me not to tell, what's the other name? Dave Starling, that he'd fire him. Said, they just like that, Sykes and Dick. I said, yeah, I know they used to be, but I said, Mr. Sykes got his finger on him now. She said, well, they killed no deer and divided him, because Dick said it is. Dick told her that, but don't you know that ain't so? If it had been so, he wouldn't have told you.
I don't know, sir. I haven't hardly made up my mind. I'm either going to call Williston, that Hudson Spreader Company, or see Dodd. Now, he's got a man that comes out from the shelter and puts his out each year.
But he got dissatisfied with him.
He got a little dissatisfied with him last year.
Yeah,
so
he fertilized the weeds.
Yeah. So, I don't know.
And then laughed at him.
Yeah.
He did.
Thought it was funny.
There he is, no.
No, that's not.
He's not. He's good. No, I guess not.
Well, how much do you have put out?
Well, I wanted to have about 8 tons, 8, 9, maybe 10.
What are you going to put out?
Oh, 10, what I figured on.
Yeah.
Guy, if I could get a hold of him, I got his number. But I can't get an answer on his phone.
Go in and call him, and he may be.
Well, he might be.
You won't fool with him if he stood you up, you know.
Well, he said he was going to call, and he never did, and we was here just about all day Thursday. Me and Herb One was.
Yeah. Now, I
have a number. I got a thermometer, a no rain gauge out there from the Hudson Spreader Company in Williston.
He called these people at Hawthorne, and what did you say?
Oh, that was $60 a ton for 10 put on the ground. That's too much. That's too much money.
Yeah. You can get 10 for this cost, can't you?
About $52.
Yeah.
That's including the $20 minimum fee. Well, a 10 is actually about $48.
You know, that might be more economical, that 10.
Well, I find that we get just about as much results. Now, we tried some 12, and that 10 looked like it done just about as much good. It might not last quite as long.
Well, it's just a little difference.
Well, you get a little bit more nitrogen in your plant food, in your 12.
Yeah. But that's a whole lot to pay for that extra nitrogen. Just so little.
Yeah, it is.
Well, and you think you called the Williston man?
I believe I will. I think I'll check with Dodd and see what he's going to do. Now, I talked to Ms. Dodd yesterday morning. She talked like that they was might do some fertilizing this week.
Uh-huh.
But she didn't know.
Where they got fertilized? That pasture?
That pasture.
What, not plowed up?
Well, it must be at Pangolin Coastal they got over there. Where the barn, out from
there. Yeah. They can't fertilize that watermelon field.
Oh, not hardly. She said yesterday she might want to buy some cows and put on them watermelon seeds.
You know, they're just about.
Are they going to pay more for them bony cows now than they've sold them good ones for last winter?
I told her yesterday that them bones is pretty high right now. Trying to buy and fatten out because
mighty high.
You take these speculators is buying up a bunch of them.
Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, everybody wants
them
right now.
They might can afford to lose a little bit of money.
They lost enough. I'm glad they made something.
I hadn't think of that. They have a spreader that they either loan you or rent it to you. And it's a trailer deal.
Yeah.
And I think you can haul 5 tons on it. But you got to pull it with a tractor.
Yeah.
And I don't think we got our tractor. I don't think I'll take care of it. I'm afraid it would.
You don't have to.
Call that Sandy.
And you wish you had done that?
I do. I actually do.
Now, what happened on that? You had the seed.
Yes, sir, we furnished the seed. We had, what was it, 850 pounds of seed, I think it was.
Had $350 and some odd cents worth.
So we carried, the man says, well, I can put it out with the fertilizer. If you bring it up here and let me mix it, and as I mix the fertilizer, see, I put a little bit of fertilizer and a little bit of seed and mix it. Okay, so he was telling me that he didn't know it at the time, but he said that he was mixing it and he put in 100 pounds or so and mixed it, and the phone rang or something, and he had to call to the phone in here, and he had a nigger boy then, told him to go ahead and start mixing it. So evidently the nigger boy had put the seed behind the door, or somebody had, and he just sent it, put in what he could see. And there's about half of it that was hid. So we wouldn't have known anything about that if I hadn't called the guy. I called him. His name was Faircloth, Jay Faircloth, and I asked him about putting out the fertilizer, and he said, by the way, did you go by and get your seed? And I said, no. I said, what seed? Oh, he liked 400 pounds.
Something like that.
Putting all the seed in there.
How long was that after?
Just the other day.
We just found that out this last week.
And then we went up there to get it, and they'd so hacked it.
Part of it.
And that man, Marvin, said he didn't know that man was in there when we went in there and paid for the fertilizer.
Ms. Gusser, this is just not your year.
It isn't. It's just a bad year for me.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So we
got you know, I can see.
About that to Marvin yesterday, about that picture, I said that it is a shame the way that man is. That's a good picture, but that's not the best. I've seen lots of pictures better than this. Well, the one that this was made.
Keep on eating.
Yes. Why don't you come in and have a seat?
Let's
go out where we can get a fresh air then. Hey, I don't like the smell of it.
Yeah.
Oh,
that's
so cool
beautiful
out here.
Beautiful out there. Beautiful.
Oh, boy, we're going to get a nice shower. That'd be nice on my paint.
That's going to be nice on the paint.
I don't care later.
We can,
Yeah, around here. It's dark.
Oh.
If I had more time to watch more clouds, I'd be happy.
Yeah, that's right. Isn't that the truth? Look how frisky those weeds are with that fertilizer.
He's mowing this. He started mowing a little bit of it Saturday, I think it was.
Yeah.
He got part of it mowed, and he wants to go ahead and mow the rest of it. He thought if he got them out of the way, he could work the ground a lot better. You know, he wants to drag it down, level it again.
Why, yeah.
It's all stealing those hills from those watermelons, yeah.
As hardy as them bushes are,
But all the cows look so nice. We had them out here in the field, you know, and we put them back over in here. They ate everything they could get their hold of over here.
Yeah.
And they finally come into the corner right here and bellered and bellered and bellered. So we knew them, they didn't have any more to eat. And we turned them back over in this field, and they just go up and down and up and down. It looks like they're mad because they can't eat anymore. And they're all out like that. You know?
Oh, I'd really love to see them eat.
And those calves, I think that's, I just wish we had more calves than we have.
Mm-hmm.
But they're growing so nice. Really,
with all this rain, we ought to have a good season now, shall we?
Should. I told Mr. Wilkinson Sunday, I happened to see him, and I asked him, I said, what do you think about putting in a garden this time of year? He said, well, the sun will blister it, and the rain will probably come and drown it out.
Yeah.
I said, you know, I've got a hunch that a garden right now would do good because of these everyday showers.
I think it would, too.
But he said because of such a heat during the day that it would probably...
Yeah.
not much of a vegetable.
Yeah. With his reputation as watermelons, I wouldn't want to go against him.
No.
I don't want to garden.
Yeah, he seems to think I should wait until September and then plant fall garden. But I'm not up to planting anyway. I'd love to get out.
Much to do, Shelley, and if you can go fishing with these children once a week, I think that would be the greatest contribution.
I'm not supposed to go fishing anymore. I'm not supposed to go from here to the mailbox. I can't even walk down to the mailbox with him anymore.
Well, you tell Berman to leave that old car here where you can.
I got it today.
I was supposed
to go to the doctor. He left it here, and I had a bad attack there at breakfast time. I could hardly breathe. And I got up to have a cup of coffee with him before he left. And I don't know what happened. I got an awful pain in my chest and went back in and laid down. The doctor had given me some medicine just in case I had to have it, and I used that. And I got over it all right. I've been feeling pretty well.
You look all right now.
I feel a lot better than I did this morning. Boy, that scared me a little bit. And he didn't want to go to work. I said, you just go on to work. He said, well, I'll leave the car here and take the truck. And then if you need anybody or anything, you can go in the car.
Now, have you got the hill down above? Oh, you haven't got into that either, have you?
No, cows haven't even been turned in there on that yet. They're still trying to catch up where they left off on this field here.
Now you haven't fertilized for your hay yet.
No, and it's really beautiful. Berman was looking out there yesterday, and he said, you know, he said, that grass is ready to go just about. He said, I hate to put up hay that hasn't been fertilized, but he said, that's pretty hay out there. So he's thinking about letting it go on maybe a week or two, and then baling that.
Yeah.
And then,
then fertilizing again. Yeah, then fertilizing.
It's time to bale hay. Every day we get rains, you know.
That's right. Now, the weatherman said, sure as they are, that it'd be fair till Wednesday. And over there next to me, the company cut, Saturday, they cut a good bit of that beautiful pangold they got.
Mm-hmm.
And then this morning they cut another swath of it. Now you see what's coming up. And the ground was dry already.
When they say fair, you can look for rain. Just about 90% of the time.
Well,
now this guy in the Progressive Farmer, I have more faith in his reports than I have the day-to-day reports on the radio. Have you ever keep up with him? He's pretty good. There when we had that long dry spell, he said it would rain on the 14th of... June. 14th of June. And by golly, we got the best rain. We hadn't had any in 3 months. We got the best rain on the 14th. I said, boy, from now on, I'll read his report.
Yeah, about 10 days late for the rainy season.
Yeah. And then he said we wouldn't have any more rain until the 27th of June. We got a shower on the 27th. It didn't amount to too much. It did rain. And then he said it would rain probably again the first week in July. And it didn't rain. I remember it was right around the 4th, and it didn't rain that day. But it's rained ever since.
Oh, this may go around. We don't need any right now. I need to work my back pasture. And I need to cut some of my grass. And it's just a little too wet. I tried to yesterday. No, I hadn't tried your weatherman. I'll tell you, the one I like the best is on Channel 2 at 7 o'clock in the morning. Don't you know that today show?
Oh, yeah.
They give the weather on every half hour.
Huh.
And they got a map, weather map. And I find it's... That's most helpful.
I haven't caught him. I hardly ever turn the television on that early in the morning.
On the half hour, you get news and then weather.
Hmm.
And both of them are good.
That's
so if you miss it,
that's
NBC. And that then if you miss it on 7 o'clock, you have 7:30 or 8 or 8:30. You see, you got four times.
Mm-hmm.
So you can take your choice.
What about this riding they're having up there in New Jersey?
Oh, that's
isn't that something? I just look for it to break out everywhere else. Oh, we're going to get some rain, I'm afraid.
You think so? Looks to me like that's going off back
going off in that direction, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, they're getting some rain back in now, though. Woo!
Yeah, they're getting rain back there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't imagine that's that far, do you?
I'm glad I didn't hang out my watch now. I would never have had time to drive.
No, and then you just have to handle it again. Mm-hmm. Yes, sir, all you need now is a number two farmer. Bob Berman is up at the shop.
That's right.
If you had a good hired hand, Shirley, you could just run this place just for a straight.
Well, if I felt as good as I did when we first got married, I'd go out there and pack it myself, because I don't feel that well.
No, maybe you've done too much of it.
I used to do most all the work down there, and even piling these palmetto roots every day. We'd go out real early in the morning and stay all day long and pick up those palmetto roots. We'd both be coming. Come in, we'd just as black as the ground.
Yeah.
But
you couldn't get your...
But I enjoy that. I enjoy it better than I do the housework.
Yeah.
Okay. I don't know, you seem to accomplish so much outside where you can't accomplish too much inside.
Just
you got
to do over again.
All
it's
the time.
Yeah.
Like Berman says with this painting, I painted this room in here last week and the bathroom in there. He says, you're going to kill yourself painting. I said, well, it's got to be done. You don't have the time to do it. And I enjoy doing something that looks, you know, you get a little enjoyment out of it after you do it. Where you do your housework day after day, it's just as hard, and you don't get any satisfaction out of it.
Well, it comes too regular, doesn't it?
It sure does. I kind of... I don't hate it that much, but...
Shirley, what happened over here at Woodbury Guthrie?
She's the funniest person I've ever known.
She is a clown, isn't she?
I can't get her. Miss Ma, sometimes she's, she comes over here and she'll sit for hours and she'll complain about having no money at all. And she can't, and here's what got me, though. You remember right around tax time, she came over into tax time. She came over here and she sat there in that red chair and she said, Shirley, I don't know what I'm going to do. I can't pay my taxes. And it was way overdone, you know, to pay him. And I said, well, Miss Guthrie, you don't want to lose your place. I said, if you can't pay your taxes, I said, we'll help you out some and get you over the hump. And we knew you could pay it back. Well, she said, I wouldn't want you to do that. And she got up right after I said that. I thought I made her mad. And she got in the car and tore out of here, and I didn't see her anymore for 2 weeks.
Just
but the funniest part about it was the day that one day we were over there visiting with her. Berman went over to talk to some business with Marvin. He was going to help
she
me with
the car.
Uh-huh. And Berman went over there to talk to Marvin about some machinery or something or another. So he had over there and he wanted Berman's advice. And Berman went over there to talk to him. And she drove up. No, they both drove up just as we drove in the yard. I said, oh, you've been in town spending money. She said, yes, I just went in and paid all my taxes. Now, this was about 2 months before she came over here and talked to me and told me that she didn't have her money to pay the taxes. So I thought, well, something's wrong somewhere, you know. And I told her, I said, well, if you don't have the money to pay your taxes, we'd be glad to help you and see if you can get around to where you can pay. She said, and then you can pay us back. Well, she tore out of here. She said she didn't want to do that. She got in the car and tore out of here. And 2 weeks later, I saw her again, and she still hadn't paid her taxes. And I said, Mrs. Guthrie, you're going to lose your place. I said, they're not going to fool around with you if you don't pay your taxes. She said, I know it, and I'm so worried. I'm sick. I'm so worried. And she went back home. And the next day she came back over here, and I told Berman in the meantime, I said, we better help her, because she's going to lose her place here in the world. So I had talked it over with him, and I was going to give her a check for whatever her taxes were. And she came back over the next day, and I handed her the check. She said, oh, no. She said, I didn't mean my taxes for this year. I mean for next year. I said, Mrs. Guthrie, I said, for heaven's sake, so you got enough bills right now to worry about. Don't let's not worry about taxes for next year. she said, I've already paid this tax, the taxes for this year. Well, I knew she had because when she came in that day, she said that she'd paid her taxes. But then now she's all worried. She's worried sick about her taxes for next year. Well, I'm not going to worry about that until it gets here. But she said she was real worried sick. She didn't know what she was going to do. Just like, and I presumed that it was this year's taxes.
Right.
And I kept telling her she'd lose her place if she didn't pay her taxes. Oh, I know it. I know that. But I'm so worried. I don't know where I'll get the money to pay her. Well, I just... What would you think? Wouldn't you think that was what she meant?
Sure.
I told her. I said, well, I'm certainly glad to hear that you paid this year. I said, I don't know about our taxes for next year either. I said, I don't know whether we can pay them or not. But I said, I'm not going to worry about that.
See, that's not any closer, Shirley.
Boy, look at this. Look at this.
That looks like it might be coming this way, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. It's getting closer.
Look at those low clouds.
They're traveling, too.
You may be right. You know, a cloud like that can go with that direction, but it shifts right up.
It sure,
and come right back.
Sort of spreads out. You see, there's more coming from that direction.
What got me? Hey, Bela.
Yeah. I know it. She said time again. She said, I haven't any money to get the equipment. She was worried sick about Berman and kept asking him if he was going to put up her hay for her. Well, he lives so close, you know. He lives so close to her over there, and her field being right off to the mailbox, we could just, you know, run over there when we can. And we told her we'd try to work what we can out with her. She's scared to death, I guess, that Berman wouldn't get the time to help.
Well, now you've got Berman's got this beautiful mower here. I mean, Baylor there.
Yes,
but now they're here, right next door neighbors.
Week. All right, give him some. Yes, don't make a mess and get it all over the place. You serve, Johnny. No, she's peculiar.
And you all work together ever since you've been out here.
Yes, and I thought they were pretty well. I mean, Burma didn't charge her hardly anything. Probably just enough for tractor fuel, you know, to put the tractor and baling twine to bale her hay with. That's about all we got out of it. And then Marvin turned around. They helped us. They helped us get in a lot of hay. And we stuck together and got their thing. So it worked fairly well, worked out pretty good last year. But I think the whole thing is that they were sort of worried that Berman wouldn't get around to put up, being as he has this job. But he intends to put up his own. And
well, look,
Shirley,
a man like that over there, he takes just good care of equipment in Berman.
That's right.
Why, if he just come over here and got it kept in mind, I wouldn't worry about it.
No, and well, he's used our hay rake, and he's used the mower, and I think he has used the baler a couple of times. But usually Berman's right here, or was then, you know. He was right here handy, and he'd do the baling for them so they'd get it up before the rain. He'd do the baling, and then we'd all pitch in and help load it.
Mm-hmm.
And then she hired a couple of men, too, to help along to load the hay so we'd get it in before the rain came. So it worked out pretty good. But now all they had to do was ask us for the baler. They sure could have used it this summer.
That sounds a little closer than it was.
It's getting here, I'm afraid. It's going off in this direction, huh?
Well, that's sure a great surprise to me. I'd been shopping around for a little something to keep old my house there, where I could, I'd been talking to them or anybody that listened to me. I don't fertilize, you see. But I have a little that I want to put up. I could get an old baler sort of rebuilt for $300 or $400. See, that'd just do me fine. All like that. And I'd been talking to them about it. And on Van Burn, they haul off and buy a brand new one.
You can't ever tell what Mrs. Kelsey's going to do. I found that out. You just can't. One day she says she's going to do something. She went in and she had to have a tractor. The day her tractor broke down. So she went in, she's going to buy a used tractor. She come home, she bought a new one on time. She went back 30 days and paid it off because she couldn't stand those bills, you know, and the thought of paying the bills. Well, I'm the same way. If I'm going to get one, I'd rather just pay for it right out. But I can't blame her there. But still, you can't ever tell what she's going to do. One day she's going to get something like this tractor she got. She had it all set up. Now Berman said now by this time next month she'll have that hay baler rake paper. can't stand it. And yet she hasn't got the money, see, so I don't know what to think. She will. She'll pay for it before this time next month.
I never have seen much of her. I've stopped there a time or two, you know, just past time of day, but I generally talk to Marvin. But I've seen her a time or two in the last week or so, and she looks like she is just, I don't know what it is, she's just a great sport. She just seems like she was just ready to turn a handspring sometimes.
She's a good old
just
soul.
Jolly.
Yeah,
just
she is.
Jolly.
She's a good old soul when it comes to, you know, helping out and doing anything like that, but she's kind of peculiar in another way. She makes me wonder because she changes her mind so radically, I guess you say, because one day she's going to do one thing and she can't do it because she hasn't got the money, and the next time you see her, she's already done it.
they don't have much, I gather, business with the Guthrie family. Mr. Guthrie's family.
Oh, no.
But does she have a family?
No, she has a brother and his wife, and their two children. They live on the other side of Old Town.
Yeah.
And she goes up there once in a while to see him. But they, since Mr. Guthrie's passed away, they don't like the relationship of Marvin and Mrs. Guthrie, so they tried to stay out of their affairs. And Mrs. Guthrie was sore about something that was said, but she doesn't go back to see her brother now very often. And I don't know. Of course, I understand her position with Mr. Guthrie's people. Now, Mr. Guthrie himself didn't want anything more to do with his son or his daughters or what is his immediate family, because they were trying to divide everything while he was still living, and it made him mad, you know. Well, of course, imagine if somebody wanted to get on part of the share, I guess. It's all sort of mixed up. But he divided. See, he'd been married before. And there has been, and then he had children by his first wife. And there's been quite a bit of a mix up there. And they have a, Mr. Guthrie, I understand, was worth quite a bit. And he had a beautiful home down near Tampa somewhere. And he gave this to his first wife and his children. And then married Mrs. Guthrie and stayed here on the old homestead where he was born and raised. Matter of fact, Mrs. Guthrie couldn't turn around and sell her place if she wanted to. This place is now. It's made up that she can stay there. The will is that she can stay there for the rest of her life and remodel it or do whatever she pleases with it, but she can't sell it because it's an old home.
Is that the one down the road?
That's right across from our mailbox.
Yeah.
I think there's 60 acres in there. No. Yeah, 60 acres.
Uh-huh.
Now that's all hers.
That's not improved.
Well, now that's where she's doing all this bulldozing
work
over.
Yeah.
And she's pretty well disturbed about how much that fella charged her for bulldozing. Marvin told her, he said, now if you're going to do that, you stand right there and let Marvin stand there.
Berman.
She's sort of mixed up. You got to kind of look over her in a way.
I'm glad Berman's doing this up there for the money in it. I could wish for other reasons he was still out here.
Oh, yeah. I miss him. Something awful. I told him he went back to where he started here the 8th of May. And it seems so strange. I'd watch for him all the time coming up the lake. Like one of the kids was on the ride the first day. Well, honey, the honeymoon's over after 11 years. He said, I got to go to work. So he went on to the university to go to work.
Well, we have watched one storm, Shirley. This is the first one I've watched all summer. You know, you can see better than I can over there. There's too many trees around the place. I have a feeling sometime I'll just cut them all down. At least in the back.
Yeah.
I don't
Oh, uh-huh.
See, I'm surrounded with trees, yeah. And I can't see out to it.
Well, that's what I like about this place. It's open, and yet it's off the road, and we're to ourselves, more or less. And
oh, yeah.
Not bothered by anyone.
Yeah.
It's fairly...
Oh, you just want a minute, you know, you just...
I got out there yesterday afternoon, and I sat out there on the front porch of the house. And I stayed there, I guess, about 3 hours, just to...
You ought to go away from home just a little every now and then, so you can appreciate it when you get back. Shelley, it may come. Now, it looks like it's a little closer. And you've got plenty to do, and I need to run on, so I enjoyed the visit.
Oh, really? We're
gonna
get much if it does rain. Woo, isn't that sharp though?
Yes. Well, I just love a thunderstorm like
this. Yeah. Well, when I was a kid, that used to excite me something. I was like, get out and run. My kids won't do this. That was the biggest scaredy cats I ever saw. And a horse, and I had that horse on when I was their age, I'd been on him and all over the place, and no one could have kept me off of him.
See, the wind's getting here.
Yeah.
Take care of yourself, would you?
Hope you don't.